In celebration of the film industry's highest honor, the Academy Awards, HDNet Movies rolls out the red carpet for its third annual movie event, and the Oscar goes to. It is with film critic Richard Roper returning to lend his movie industry and pop culture expertise to a slate of over 50 Oscar-winning films airing nonstop from the 1st of February to the night of the 91st Academy Awards, February 24th. This year, Roper will be on site at the home of the inaugural 1929 Oscar ceremony, the Hollywood Roosevelt Hotel, as he guides viewers on a cinematic odyssey that puts the spotlight on some of the most important and influential films of all time. For over three decades, Richard Roper has been the leading film critic and a columnist for the Chicago Sun-Times. He rose to national prominence as the co-host of the popular Ebert and Roper series alongside Roger Ebert. It is a great pleasure to welcome Richard Roper back to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us, sir. Always nice to have you on the program.
It's always lovely to talk to you as well. Thanks for having me back.
Very nice to have you. So how did all of this come to be? Because this seems very cool. How much do you get to curate this and get to figure out what you're going to show over a month?
You know, it's actually a lot of fun. It's a collaborative effort with the fine folks at HDNet Movies. We talk for a few months leading up to the special itself, and of course a lot of it's about which movies have we spotlighted before. We want to mix in some classics, so it's kind of a, you know, what we like to do is get a little bit of something for everyone. So we have more than 50 movies, as you mentioned, and everything from more recent films that people might know. Then we go back to classics from the 50s. You know, we get to spotlight Marty, which Ernest Borgnine won the Academy Award for, In the Heat of the Night, Stalag 17. And we also, you know, we delve into comedies as well, which sometimes, of course, often get overlooked during the Academy Awards. But we'll show something like City Slickers because, of course, Jack Palance won for Best Supporting Actor. It's fun to show films like that as well.
And do you show the one-arm push-ups too, or just the...
We might just do that. In fact, who knows? Maybe I try one. I actually like to show I could do it even better. I could do like two-armed push-ups. Anybody could do one.
That's right.
Both arms.
Absolutely. When you think of these films, I mean, obviously what they have in common for your purposes is in some way, shape, or form, they won an Academy Award.
Right.
Beyond that, what do you see? I mean, there is just an implied excellence just in that then, right?
Yes, that's actually a great question because in some cases I hadn't seen a lot of these movies myself in a long time, so I'd go back and watch them. And what you find is even though many of these films are very much of their times, there's also kind of a universal, you know, quality to the storytelling. You know, the stories still hold up, even if the context, the era, the fashion, et cetera, have changed. So you look at a movie like In the Heat of the Night, which is almost 50 years ago, or The Defiant Ones, which is, you know, just about 60 years ago now, and, you know, exploring themes of race and bigotry and people overcoming that and learning about each other and, you know, stuff that's still resonates so much today. So that's one of the common themes I found was like how well these films hold up. That's really kind of really exciting to see.
When it comes to that of holding up and obviously you want to look, you want to show films that people are going to watch too and be reminded of. And I think everyone has that list of movies that they know they should probably watch but haven't, right? And this gives them a nice excuse to do it.
Yes, that's absolutely true. You know, I'm surprised sometimes when I talk to people who love movies, and you know, obviously a lot of times it's younger people, and they haven't seen some of these films. And I said, listen, if you're a fan of No Country for Old Men, if you're a fan of, you know, The Ballad of Lester Scruggs, in recent westerns, The Sisters Brothers, which came out last year, you gotta watch High Noon. You need to see this film. If you're a fan of these all these movies and a lot of times limited series that are based on real life crimes, you gotta watch Reversal of Fortune and see what Jeremy Irons does as Klaus von Bülow, winning the Academy Award and deservedly so. So you know, it's great for me to see people who haven't seen these films experience them for the first time.
So a film like Letters from Iwo Jima, it is up for Best Picture. It does not win. It does win for Best Sound Editing. Does that still count? Are all Oscars created equal?
Yeah, well, you know, I obviously, you know, the glamour categories are the ones we remember, but when it comes to making a film, when it comes to, you know, putting out a film that is has lasting value, things like sound editing and certainly cinematography and really, you know, certainly the screenplay can be as important, if not more important. And, you know, certain elements might not be something, you know, no one watches a movie and comes out and goes, well, that's the best sound mixing of the year. No doubt about it. But they might have been blown away by it and affected by the sound mixing and, of course, the editing itself in ways that they don't even realize. So it's like you don't have to actually be in the kitchen all the time to see all the great ingredients, but, you know, the meal sometimes is more than just about that steak that's on the plate.
But sometimes you are taken by something. I thought of this while I was watching Quiet Place. So you notice the sound in A Quiet Place. You notice the sound in Baby Driver. It's something fascinating that is something that they are focused on as filmmakers.
Well, those are two great examples of John Krasinski and Edgar Wright, you know, directing those films. Clearly, the cliche about the sound being another character. Sometimes people say, like, you know, the setting is another character.
Right.
Well, in those cases, you know, the sound is an absolutely huge, huge thing. That's when the sound really does make a huge difference in a movie. Either one of those films in the hands of lesser filmmakers might not even work without the sound editing.
When you look at the list of films that you are showing, I assume that this was compiled well before the nominations for this year.
Yes, that is true.
So are you able to make parallels to reference those films and kind of make a point using this year's crop?
Well, I mean, you know, I think just by happenstance, you could probably see some similarities or some parallels. For example, we're going to be showing Woodstock, one of the great concert documentaries of all time, which was actually edited in large part by Martin Scorsese before he became a director, full-time director. And if you look at the concert scenes in A Star is Born, although it doesn't have the rapid cuts of Woodstock, it's a lot more similar to a music documentary than most traditional musical biopics. In fact, Bohemian Rhapsody, even though it's about a real-life group, is a much more traditional-looking musical, whereas A Star is Born, Bradley Cooper as a director, has a lot of handheld cameras and brings us right on stage with the performers, and I think that's what makes it so effective.
About that film. So why, we had the SAG Awards last night. Why is that film not getting more love, do you think?
Well, it's interesting because, obviously it did so well at the box office and then it's getting a lot of nominations, but it seems to be like now it's the film that keeps getting upset by other films. And I'm not sure what's happening there. If maybe some older Academy members and voting members are starting to see it and they're not as impressed, or they don't, it doesn't resonate with them, and they remember the 1976 version with Streisand and Christofferson. But I do feel now it's almost like when we're following a political campaign and the front runner just never gains that momentum. And now I feel like for the Oscars, I mean, Lady Gaga's going to win for Best Song. That's going to win for Best Song. But I wouldn't be surprised if it gets shut out in all the other categories.
So is that's kind of like a Jeb Bush thing, right? I mean, you expect him to be the front runner, and then he just isn't.
Absolutely. And there was talk about A Star is Born as an Oscar contender before it ever hit theaters. And sometimes, you kind of, the weight of all those expectations, the burden of that, but people see the film and they go, well, that wasn't, I don't know if it's all that. And I think we got the first indication of that when Bradley Cooper was not nominated for Best Director, which everybody thought he was going to be. The fact that he didn't get a directing nomination tells me the Academy probably doesn't think it's the best picture of the year.
Headlines were made early last year when the Academy announced that they were going to do a Best Popular Film. Is that the wording of it? A Best Popular Film category?
Yes.
And when you look at what that would be, I mean, there are popular films, obviously, on this year's list of A Star is Born, Black Panther, even Bohemian Rhapsody. But when you look when you look back at the films that you've selected that were best Oscar, were they popular films, many of them, or were they films that probably wouldn't have been as noticed if they had not won the Academy Award for Best Picture?
I think in most cases the latter is true. It's films that maybe not flops, but they were just smaller films that were never going to grab a huge audience. And that even includes films this year like Green Book, and to a lesser extent Vice, and you know, films like that. They were even BlacKkKlansman, which did well, but they were never going to make $300 million. So it's always great when films like that get recognized at the Academy Awards, because as you know, it's going to lead to the film usually being re-released in theaters, certainly finding a bigger audience on home video. People still pay attention if they see a film has 8 Oscar nominations, or then 2 or 3 Oscar wins. It helps those films, and I think that's a great thing.
10 Oscar nominations for Roma. We can see this on Netflix if we're a Netflix subscriber. Is that a good thing?
Well, you know, Netflix, they figured out a way to get it nominated. Of course, they put it in a couple of theaters for 1 week before putting it on streaming. I'd like to have seen it get a larger and more widespread theatrical release. I know it's in more theaters now. I think it's the kind of film that needs to be seen in a theater. But I'm not in that camp that criticizes Netflix for trying to figure out the game and actually figuring out, you know, the ways people like to watch movies. They're producing a lot of original content. They're releasing a lot of original content. And it's up to the studios to keep pace with them. Times have changed. People love watching movies at home. I used to say you have to watch every movie in a theater. You know, the truth is now a lot of people have pretty darn good theater systems at home. You can get a good flat-screen TV for a few $100. So even if you could do that, you know, it's the most important thing for me is for people to watch the films.
Is to see the movies and to see a movie like Roma and of course Amazon is doing this with Cold War and others. I mean, there are soon going to be many players in this game, I'm assuming.
Well, and you know, and there's films like, you know, The Irishman, talking about Martin Scorsese, which has, you know, some of the greatest actors of our generation. That's a film that doesn't get made without Netflix necessarily, and you know, Amazon, same thing with their movies. And also some of their limited series. You know, we see Academy Award-winning actors like Julia Roberts doing Homecoming for Amazon Prime. So, you know, for people who love great acting and filmmaking, whether it's chopped into one-hour episodes and called television, or it's a Netflix original film, we're still watching some of the best film writers, directors, and actors who might not be doing that work if it weren't for Amazon and Netflix and some of these other newer players.
For your participation in and the Oscar goes to, you will be on site at the home of the first Oscar ceremony, the Hollywood Roosevelt Hotel. Tell us a little bit about that hotel, its history, and the shape it's in now.
Yeah, the Hollywood Roosevelt Hotel, you know, it was the host of the first Oscar Awards in 1929. It's beautifully refurbished, if anybody gets a chance to go there, and it's right there, you know, on Hollywood Boulevard, across the street from the theater where we now see most of the Oscars. Right now, the Walk of Fame, where you see all the, you know, the famous stars literally embedded in the sidewalk. And the hotel itself has got such great history, and they're so respectful of that. So even though it has all the modern amenities, there are photos all over the place of stars through the years. There are, you know, things you could read up about it where you're like, you'll be sitting in a small library or a corner bar and realize this is the same place where Warren Beatty once hung out, where Truman Capote held court. So there's a lot of great history to it, and it's just a really cool hotel. So it was fun for me to host the special there, to hang out at the Hollywood Roosevelt Hotel, and tell folks, listen, you know, I'm not a paid spokesperson, but I would tell you, if you get a chance to go check out the hotel, it's a really cool part of Hollywood history.
Last question, how do you feel about a hostless Oscars?
Why not? That's what I feel. I feel in recent years it would have been an upgrade, right? I think James Franco and Anne Hathaway would be the first to tell us.
Yep.
So I'm all for them trying something different.
Well, HDNet Movies presents its third annual movie event, and the Oscar goes to, with film critic Richard Roper, featuring a slate of over 50 Oscar-winning films airing nonstop from February 1st to the night of the 91st Academy Awards, February 24th. Again, HDNet. Richard Roper, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Have a great Oscar season, and thank you for sharing with us this morning.
Thanks so much for having me.
Great pleasure. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.